the impact of myasthenia gravis symptoms can pile up. Plans getting rescheduled, hobbies being left behind, everyday tasks going unfinished. If MG keeps disrupting your life, the burden may be bigger than you realize. Learn how to assess and track the impact of your symptoms so you can talk about it with your healthcare team. Take the next step to better understand how MG symptoms may be impacting your life. Visit mgsymptomimpact.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This summer, whatever you're watching, baseball, golf, soccer, racing, DraftKings has you covered for every single moment of it. The DraftKings Sports app is now available in all 50 states, bringing the game straight to your fingertips wherever you are. New DraftKings customers, sign up with code KSR. Spend $5 to get $150 in rewards within 14 days. Includes all markets. That's code KSR. In partnership with DraftKings, the crown is yours. Bet with DK Sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 1-800-MY-RESET. Connecticut? Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino in Kansas, bet tax pass-through may apply in Illinois. 21 plus, void in Canada. Event contract trading with DraftKings predictions involves risk of loss. Availability varies. Predictions offer void in New York. Bet to get bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Trade to get prediction dollars that expire in 1 year. $50 in rewards issued every 7 days via click to claim for 14 days. One non-withdrawable reward redeemable. Terms at dkng.co/offer. Limited time offer.
Ryan Seacrest here. Every great barbecue has one secret ingredient. Patience. You do a little, and you wait a little. And while your dinner does its thing, you got a few minutes to yourself, right? Well, kick back with a little Chumba Casino. A flip and a spin. Who knows? Maybe even a login bonus. It is the perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
You're listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
I solemnly swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me God.
Thank you.
All right. Witness has been sworn. Let me just inquire. I believe just to clarify, Mr. Wood, this is not an expert. Is this an expert witness that the exclusionary rule would not apply to?
I believe it would not apply.
I guess if you could advise.
He is. This is Dr. Garth Warren is a medical examiner in the state of Idaho. He's a licensed pathologist.
Okay. I'll just inquire, I guess, and then make a determination if I need to. But have you been reviewing or watching any of the trial testimony in this case?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, with that in mind, then I'll just go ahead and allow for direct examination, Mr. Wood, without needing to determine whether that would apply in this case or not.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you, well, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Can you state your name and spell it for the record?
Garth Warren, GARTHWARREN.
What is your occupation or profession?
I am a forensic pathologist for the Ada County Coroner's Office.
And as a forensic pathologist, are you a duly licensed physician in the state of Idaho?
Yes.
How long have you been licensed to practice your profession?
For 7 years in Idaho, and before that, 5 years in Colorado.
And are you presently engaged in the practice of that same profession?
Yes.
Where did you receive your training in pathology?
So I did my general pathology training at Oregon Health and Sciences University in Portland, Oregon. And that was 3 years. And after I completed that, I stayed on for 2 years and completed a neuropathology fellowship, which is essentially just specialized training in the brain and spinal cord. And then I went to the Denver office of the medical examiner in Denver, Colorado for my forensic pathology fellowship, which was 1 year.
And what are your duties as a medical examiner in Ada County, Idaho?
So working for the Ada County Coroner's Office, our office investigates a wide variety of deaths. And there's certain deaths that fall under our jurisdiction. Typically, those are non-natural deaths. So any suicides, accidents, homicides, and natural deaths as well. Not all natural deaths, but for instance, a young individual who passes away and there's not a good explanation of why they passed away. We'd investigate something like that. So those cases would come to our office. And my job is essentially to try to figure out why the person died. And the main tool that I use for that is the autopsy. We use other studies as well. But I use an autopsy to try to figure out why they died. And then ultimately, my job is to determine the cause and manner of death.
And you work at the Ada County Coroner's Office, correct?
That's correct.
To your knowledge, does Ada County have a contract with Fremont and Madison counties for you and other medical examiners to perform autopsy work?
Yes.
During your experience in the Ada County Coroner's Office, approximately how many autopsies have you performed?
So about 200 to 250 autopsies for 7 years. So over 1,500 autopsies.
So that's per year, that initial number you gave? Okay. Can you say yes, sorry, into the microphone? Or no?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Are you on staff or affiliated in any way with any universities or academic institutions?
Yes, the Idaho College of Medicine. We have medical students. I'm an adjunct professor there. We have medical students who come over and do rotations with us. And we show them what forensic pathology is like. And they rotate for about a month. And we have a number of those students who come and rotate at our office.
Are you a member of any specialized medical or scientific groups or associations?
Yes, I'm a member of the National Association of Medical Examiners and also the International Association of Coroners and Medical Examiners. They're both governing bodies for coroners and medical examiners throughout the country. And they do a wide variety of functions in education. They also accredit offices. Basically give them a stamp of approval if they've met all the criteria set forth.
And the accreditation, is your office accredited?
Yes.
Can you briefly tell the jury what the American Board of Pathology is?
Yeah, so the American Board of Pathology is one of a number of different boards of in medicine. There's the American Board of Pathology, there's the American Board of Surgery, there's the American Board of Family Medicine, and so forth. So ultimately, their goal is to certify pathologists and give them a stamp of approval and say, now you're certified, now you can go out and you can practice as a pathologist. How they do that is after you complete your training. So for instance, after I completed my general pathology training at Oregon, I had to go take a day-long test, and then you have to pass that test. And then after that, the board will say you're board certified, and then you can go practice. And the same thing with neuropathology and forensic pathology, the same thing happened.
And are you certified in pathology?
Yes.
And you've mentioned forensic pathology. Can you define that term or describe what that means for the jury?
So it's really the practice of medicine, specifically forensic pathology and performing autopsies in the context of the legal system. So I often go to court and testify, not on every case, but on many cases. So it's really, it's the combination of we're applying medicine and forensic pathology to the legal system.
Are you the author of any textbooks or any specific papers in the field of pathology?
I published papers when I was a neuropathology fellow.
Can you explain for the jury what the difference is between a manner of death and cause of death?
Yes. So the cause of death is the natural event or the traumatic injury that ultimately sets into motion a series of events that causes somebody to die. So for instance, a heart attack, that would be a cause of death, or a gunshot wound to the head would be a cause of death. Manner of death is a little different. It deals with more of the circumstances surrounding the death. In most states, you have five options. You have natural, accident, suicide, homicide, and then undetermined. And based on the circumstances, you essentially pick one of those. An example I always give is a gunshot wound to the head. A gunshot wound to the head could be self-inflicted. It could be by somebody else, a homicide. It could be an accident. So in order to determine whether it's one of those, you really have to know the circumstances of death. You know, I have to know the scene. And you can't just base it on the autopsy because it could look exactly the same.
And can you tell the jury what an unattended death is?
So an unattended death is essentially a death that's unattended or that's not attended by a physician. So if you pass away in the hospital and there is a physician present, that would be an attended death. If you pass away at your home, or if somebody passes away in a public park, that would be considered an unattended death.
Is there a general procedure you follow when performing an autopsy?
Yes.
During your years of experience as a medical examiner or a forensic pathologist, have you had occasion to observe many cases in which the cause of death was homicide or linked to a homicide?
Yes.
Doctor, were you involved in the autopsy of JJ or Joshua Jackson Vallow?
Yes.
When was that?
That was on June 11th, 2020.
Where did that autopsy take place?
At the Ada County Coroner's Office.
Was this the first time you had ever seen JJ Vallow?
Yes.
Do you recall approximately how long that autopsy lasted?
It lasted approximately 4 hours.
And did you write a report summarizing your findings for that autopsy?
Yes.
Based on that autopsy, and based on your education, training, and experience, have you formed an opinion concerning the cause of death of JJ Vallow?
Yes, I have.
What was that cause of death?
Asphyxia by plastic bag over the head and duct tape covering the mouth.
Can you explain for the jury how that autopsy commenced? What were the first steps?
So as we mentioned, the first time that I saw JJ was in the morgue at the Ada County Coroner's Office. I went into the morgue and JJ was received in a sealed black body bag. It was sealed to preserve evidence by law enforcement. So that was the first time that I'd seen JJ, and we broke the seal at that time and we opened up the sealed black body bag. And within the body bag, JJ was further enclosed within a black tarp that was held together with multiple strips of duct tape. So we opened that bag, and that was really the first time I got a good look at JJ.
And what did you observe when you were able to see him?
So a couple things jumped out that were pretty obvious. One was there was a plastic bag that was over JJ's head. And it was wrapped around the face with duct tape all the way down to the neck. The forearms and the hands were also, they were bound with duct tape. The ankles were bound with duct tape. And JJ was clothed in a red pajama top, red pajama bottom, disposable diaper, and black socks. And then you could also tell, even when he was clothed, really the only part of his skin that was showing at that point were his upper arms. And you could tell he was in a state of decomposition. It didn't look like normal skin. It was green and kind of had a green and tan, leathery appearance to it. So I could tell that JJ was in a state of decomposition.
Were photographs taken of this autopsy?
Yes.
Once you were able to observe JJ, what did you do next?
So after we photographed that, we undressed JJ. We took the pajama bottoms and tops off. We took the socks off and we submitted those to law enforcement. We removed the plastic bag and the duct tape around the head and the neck, and we submitted that to law enforcement. We removed the duct tape that bound his arms and his legs, and we submitted that to law enforcement. And at that point in time, JJ was nude on the table, and we collected other evidence at that point in time. So in addition to everything that was on JJ, we also took hand swabs from both hands, nail swabs. The nails actually came off fairly easily because of the state of decomposition, so we ended up submitting all the nails as evidence as well. We also took oral swabs, anal swabs, and penile swabs at that time.
And were those swabs a part of an external examination?
Yes. At that point in time, we had still not started the internal portion of the autopsy.
And did you do anything else as part of the external examination?
Yes. So the autopsy really consists of an internal examination and an external examination. We start with the external examination, and I describe everything on JJ from his hair color to his eye color, his ears, his teeth, the fingernails, all the way down to his feet. And I'm just looking for any signs of natural disease or any kind of trauma that would help me explain why JJ passed away.
Did you see any external signs of disease?
I did not.
Did you see any external signs of trauma?
I did.
And you described those for the jury.
So one of the things that jumped out was there were scratch-like abrasions on the left side of JJ's neck. In addition to that, there was bruising on JJ's right and left upper arm, and a symmetrical bruising. And then in addition, there was diffuse hemorrhage under one of JJ's fingernails, his right thumb. There's diffuse hemorrhage under his thumbnail.
And I'm going to interrupt you. I'm sorry. Can you define that type of hemorrhage?
It's called a subungual hemorrhage.
And what does that mean?
I mean, there's been force or trauma to the finger. Just like I don't know if you've ever, for instance, slammed your finger in the door. You get that diffuse hemorrhage underneath your fingernail. That would be a subungual hemorrhage.
And did you observe?
Can I have him spell that term of what's after sub on the hemorrhage?
Please, let me give this a shot. SUBUNGUAL.
Thank you.
And did you, observe any other signs of possible trauma on JJ's external body?
The only other thing I found, there was what appeared to be possible bruising on JJ's ankles, just to the naked eye after we removed the duct tape. It looked like possible bruising. You do have to be careful when the body's in a state of decomposition, because sometimes decomposition can look like bruising. So there were some things that we did to rule out that, both in the arms and the ankles.
And what is it that you did to examine that or rule that out?
So what you do in that case is you make incisions into the skin and you look for hemorrhage in the subcutaneous tissue. The general rule of thumb is if it's true and it's real, you'll see actual hemorrhage in the subcutaneous tissue. If it's most likely decomposition, then you won't see that hemorrhage. So when we did that on the arms, both of the arms showed bleeding in the subcutaneous tissue. So to me, that meant they were real bruises. There was no definitive hemorrhage in the areas that I thought to be possible hemorrhage in the ankles. So although it looked like bruising, I can't say that it was.
But on the arms, what was your conclusion on his arms?
That it was bruising.
Did you perform an internal examination as part of your autopsy?
I did.
Can you just briefly kind of explain that process for the jury?
Yes. So we do make incisions in the body to look at the to get access to the brain, and also to look at the heart and the lungs and the liver and all the different organs. In this case, JJ's organs were remarkably intact, considering how long he was probably deceased. They did have decomposition, but they were very well intact, well formed. So I was able to evaluate each organ. Essentially, what I found was there was decomposition changes, but there was no evidence of overt trauma or overt natural disease, either just looking at it or under the microscope, looking at tissues under the microscope.
And just to be clear, you said you saw no signs of natural disease.
Correct.
Did you check for rib fractures?
I did. In this case, what you can do to get even a better look for rib fractures, you can peel a thin layer called the pleura that lines the ribs, and you can get a really good look at the ribs. I saw no rib fractures. And in addition, we did do full body x-rays on JJ. I think we took 6 x-rays looking for fractures. And I did not see any overt fractures or bony abnormalities on x-ray either.
Were you able to observe his lungs?
Yes.
What did you observe there?
His lungs essentially showed decomposition changes. Like I stated, but there was no evidence of natural disease either, grossly looking at them. And I also took sections of the lungs and looked at them under the microscope. And I did not see any obvious natural disease under the microscope as well.
Did you gather any samples for testing from JJ's body?
Yes.
What were those? Do you recall?
Yes. So typically in an autopsy, we try to get blood, urine, and vitreous fluid. So vitreous fluid is fluid in the eyeball. We can do a number of different tests on those samples. In this particular case, because of the state of decomposition, we are unable to get blood, urine, or vitreous fluid. So what you do in that case is you can use a sample from a different organ, a liver. The liver is a good sample to get for toxicology. So we obtained liver to send out for toxicology. And then we also obtained a portion of a rib. We also obtained 2 molars. We obtained hair samples for potential DNA analysis that might be needed later on.
Right. And did you stated that you sent some of those samples off for testing?
Correct.
Do you recall what the results of that testing was?
Yes. So the liver sample, we sent for toxicology, and it came back positive for ethanol or alcohol, low levels of ethanol. It came back for a what's called GHB or gamma hydroxybutyric acid. It also came back positive for caffeine, and it came back positive for theobromine.
And did any of those elements or those the amounts of those substances cause you any concern?
So the caffeine is caffeine. We all know what caffeine is. That's very common. We get that. That didn't bother me. The theobromine, that's essentially, that can be found in tea and cocoa products. So that did not concern me as well. The ethanol, that very well could have been a byproduct of decomposition. That's very common. We see that a lot. So I can't completely rule out that JJ wasn't exposed to alcohol when he was alive, but it's very possible that it was just postmortem production from the decomposition process. And then the GHB, so what GHB is, it's essentially, it's a CNS or central nervous system depressant. It is found naturally in the body. So it's found predominantly in the brain and the spinal cord, and it can be also found in peripheral tissues. But it is also a drug that's used for both medicinal and recreational purposes as well. So for medicinal purposes, sometimes it's used for narcolepsy. For recreational purposes, it's often called liquid ecstasy. Sometimes it's referred to as a date rape drug. But in addition, so it has CNS depressants. It also can cause euphoria, increased libido, and it can also cause amnesia or memory loss while the drug is on board. So that was a concern when I saw that. But the level that it was at, I can't tell if it was he was exposed to it or if it was produced postmortem. It very well could have been produced postmortem, but I also can't rule out that that it was ingested.
Your Honor, I just note, looking at the time, this is normally when I would introduce some pictures. I don't think we're going to really have time to get into that. If it's all right with the court, I'm going to move forward with a little bit of other questioning and then pick up in the morning.
Okay, let's do that because we'll likely need to rearrange the gallery as well for that. So thank you, Mr. Wood. You may continue.
Doctor, were you involved in the autopsy of Tylee Ryan?
Yes.
When was that?
That was on the same day as JJ's autopsy. So that was June 11th, 2020.
And where did that take place?
That was also at the Ada County Coroner's Office.
Was this the first time you had ever seen Tylee Ryan?
Yes.
How long did that autopsy last?
That autopsy took longer. It took about a week.
And why was that?
Tylee's autopsy was different. Typically, when I do an autopsy, I get an intact body, and I go through the same procedures that I did with JJ. And that in Tylee's case, her body was received in multiple bags. It was received in two of the bags were body bags, sealed body bags. A third bag was a brown paper bag, and it contained five additional paper bags within that were sealed. Within all of those bags were human remains, a combination of bones, tissue, organs, and then also quite a bit of mud and dirt and other debris. So you can imagine with that many bags, going through, cleaning them, trying to figure out what is what, it took a long time.
Did you write a report summarizing your findings for that autopsy?
I did.
Based on that autopsy and upon your education, training, and experience, have you formed an opinion concerning the cause of death of Tylee Ryan?
I have.
What is that?
I determined the cause of death to be homicide by unspecified means.
And when you say homicide by unspecified means, is that a specific categorization?
It is. So essentially what it means is after reviewing all the information and performing the autopsy and doing toxicology and so forth, that I believe that Tylee, that she was murdered. I think it was a homicide. But because of the state of the body, I just can't say exactly how. So this term, homicide by unspecified means, it's well known in the forensic literature. It's been used by forensic pathologists for years. And there's certain guidelines and criteria in the forensic literature that are out there to kind of help guide you when you're thinking about using this as a term. So those criteria are, one, it has to be objectively suspicious circumstances. And there are a number of examples they give for that. So one is that the body is clearly out of sight and has been put in a way that's trying to hide the body. Another one is that the evidence has been someone's trying to conceal the evidence. So that would be something like burning the body or dismembering the body or dumping bleach on the body. So in this case, Ty Lee was dismembered and she was also set on fire. So that clearly fit within that criteria. The second criteria is based on the autopsy, you can't determine an obvious cause of death. And there's two parts to that. One, if you have an intact body, you do the full autopsy and there's no other reason why this individual should be dead. You can't find anything. The second would be there's not enough of the body to make a determination. So Ty Lee fit within that second category in that. The third criteria is toxicology. Is there any evidence that toxicology played a role in the decedent's death? In this particular case, there was not that I could find. And then the fourth criteria is that based on historical and social information, is there a good explanation why she could have been dead? And based on the medical records and the information that I had, I didn't think there was a reasonable explanation for Ty Lee to be dead. So based on that, I called it homicide by unspecified means.
And you mentioned you did review her medical records.
I did.
Did she have any, do you recall what her medical history was?
Yes, I do. So she had a history of anxiety and she had panic attacks. She also had a history of ovarian cysts. They were benign, but they would sometimes cause her discomfort. She also had a history of pancreatitis. She had multiple bouts of pancreatitis, is inflammation of the pancreas. There's multiple reasons why you can have pancreatitis in adults. It's usually alcohol, or gallstones that causes pancreatitis in children and adolescents. You get a little broader differential. It could be a wide variety of things. It could be the anatomy is a little different and that causes inflammation. It'd be a number of different prescription medications. And based on her medical records, they didn't know exactly why she was getting them. There was mention that every time she took an antibiotic, which is one of the drugs that can cause pancreatitis, that she would tend to get pancreatitis. So that may have played a role. And then the other thing that she had was, it's called mesenteric adenitis. So that's essentially, you have lymph nodes in your abdomen in the adipose tissue. So if you get a virus or those can become inflamed and they can cause pain. And they can cause pain that's similar to like your appendix. So I believe that is it for what I remember from her medical records.
And did anything in that medical history, were any of those things you just described problematic enough to explain her death?
No, not in my opinion.
Your Honor, I note the time. And the state is certainly willing and able to keep going, but leave that to the deference of the court.
Okay.
Scheduling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Wood. We're going to go ahead and conclude for the day. I'll note tomorrow when we come back on, I anticipate you're going to have photos that we won't be broadcasting. Is that correct, Mr. Wood?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. We'll set the gallery up to accommodate that tomorrow. We will go ahead and adjourn for the day. Thank you for complying with courtroom conduct order. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen of the juror, for your attentiveness today. Please follow the court's admonishment as you break for the day to not discuss the case amongst yourselves or with anyone else. Please don't do anything to research the case, look the case up in any way, or follow the case in any media. We'll have you fill out your juror affirmation when you return tomorrow. We'll continue with the direct examination of Dr. Warren tomorrow morning at 8:30, and that will be it for today. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
All right, please.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Ryan Seacrest here. So every great barbecue takes a little patience. And while the food does its thing, you can enjoy a little Chumba Casino. The perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Ryan Seacrest here. So every great barbecue takes a little patience. And while the food does its thing, you can enjoy a little Chumba Casino. The perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here. And if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk. Breathe. Rechalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.